accession number 20808, reel 3.
John Morris, reel 3.
We managed to get him back. I never saw him again until our 50th annual reunion. And it was remarkable, Ed. He said he recognised me straight away. Mind you, I hadn't seen him for over 45 years, I suppose. And I said to him, "How's your leg?" And he looked at me. Like, you know, I told him, he said, "Oh, it was you, was it?" And I said, "Yes." I said, "What happened to you, sir?" And he said, "Oh," he said, "his brother, he was in the guards. His parents used him as the guards. And his family were guard people. And his brother had been killed in Italy. And he was the only one left. So the family wanted him to go back to his... he lives in Portugal now. Anyway, from then on, we went back.
But in Albania, did you succeed in stopping the German retreat?
No, we didn't. But the partisans, the Albanian partisans, we couldn't be anywhere in one place too long, because firstly we're lightly armed, and secondly we'd have to be, you know, supplied. So I mean, it's more or less like hit and run operations. But the partisans managed to close this road eventually after we left.
But did you personally fire your weapon in that Albanian?
I let blast at anything. I mean, you're more or less like, I mean, you just can't explain. Every time you fire a weapon, you don't hit everybody. You know, I mean, it's not every time that you hit anybody. I mean, you just, if you think there's somebody there, I mean, you let blast sort of thing. You're hoping in hell, you know, he doesn't recover and fire at you sort of thing. You know, more or less like, it's things that more or less like keep their heads down sort of thing until you get up close, and then you can either... You know, if they're there, you finish off with a grenade, or you shoot them.
But were you operating against vehicles or against?
No, it was very few vehicles, really. I mean, there may be lorries, but they're all static troops. You know, static positions. They're mostly their positions are on top of either a mountain or a hill.
And did you attack them at night or in the daytime?
No, this was daytime. This was a daytime operation. We sailed at night. We would land early in the morning, but it was a daytime operation. Then we went back to Italy.
So you were just there a day, were you?
Yeah, just a day, yeah. And we went back to Italy. And then October, which is our... It was a big operation. We had to capture the port of Sarandi, which is on the Greek-Albanian border, right opposite Corfu. Then we landed on this little beach. There was a valley. Very mountainous, hilly. We were two LCIs. There was a whole number two commando, the old commando. Our colonel was Colonel Todd. He'd been in number nine commando. We'd already sent a party out and. We saw this torch flashing. It was only a little beach. We all took our supplies up this valley where we bivvied. And of course, there was a place called Delvine or Delvini. And there was a mobile 88 on a half track. Whether he knew we were there or not, I don't know. But every now and again, he was sending over a shell. You could hear it whistling over your head. And we were buried in these little gullies there. And on the second day, it rained and it rained and it rained. I've never known, well, like the weather we're having now, I mean, torrential rain. Well, Tom Churchill, in his book, he was still in command of us then, of the brigade. And he said he was out in Burma during the Burmese uprising in between the wars in the 30s. And he said he's been in monsoons, and he said he's never known anything like it. Eventually, a quarter of number 2 commando were evacuated back to Italy with either trench feet or hypothermia. Our boots fell off because you were clambering over volcanic rocks and stones. And really, we had more casualties there for the weather than we had attacking Sarandi. But at any rate, we got new supplies, and I was in this bivvy, and I was shaving in this stream. Funny how things, vivid. And I could smell something, or just putrid. And I thought, after I finished shaving, I thought I'll do a bit of a recce, and saw this dead cow on there. And then I walked up a bit further and I saw this dead German, absolutely stripped of everything. He must have been there for days because he was all bloated up. He's never had a stitch of clothing, his boots had gone, and everything had gone. So I thought, I thought, oh, poor devil, and walked back. And then we had these mules were shipped over from Italy. We've been trained how to load a mule because we had to carry everything, had to be carried to up these hills and mountains. So of course I got sorted out, Morris, here's your mule. We loaded it up, because the damn thing weren't any good, you see. If one mule was hit by a bit of shrapnel, all the others would stop. Eventually, we had the local mules, with just skin and bone. But they were really hardy animals, and we had to load up the ammunition and everything, equipment on their backs, and lead them up these mountain paths. Of course, we got to the top of this hill, got in our positions. We had to attack this gun battery. In the meantime, because our casualties were so high with the weather, 40 Royal Marine Commando came over, and we had some RAF parachute levies came over, and some Highland Light Infantry lads came over, besides a battery of 25 pounders. And they had to have a full charge. It's funny how you read these things after. They had to put a full charge in the cordite into these guns, so that they could fire over these hills into Sarandi, you see, because of the steepness. And of course, doing that, it doesn't do the gun barrels any good. According to talking to these artillery, which we had quite a number of artillery men in the commandos. Anyway, got to the top of this hill. Jerry started to send up over airbursts. Lost a few men. Captain Parsons was killed. A young chap by the name of talked to his sister in when we go to the Abbey on Remembrance Saturday, on the Sunday. Oh, what was his name? Young chap, he only joined us 4 months ago, previous. He was killed. And we had to attack this gun battery. We sorted out the machine gun mess. And then got to the barbed wire. Somebody said there were mines. But anyway, we went through, got to the edge of the barbed wire, and we stopped. We looked at these artillery, these guns, and they were our own 25-pounders that the Germans had captured either in Crete or Greece. Hadn't been damaged or anything. All our markings were crossed out, and they all had the old German markings on it. There were four of them. For 25-pounders. Then we captured the town of Sarandi. And then some went over to Corfu while the rest of us cleared up, burying the dead, carrying stretchers, the wounded back to the landing craft. And then we were told that the town had been mined. The mines were in a building with a red cross on the roof. And of course, there was a New Zealander. I read in a book after, he was a New Zealander that managed to defuse some of them, but there were so many. Anyway, they went up 3 days later. There was no casualties for that. Then we, 40 Royal Marine Commando stayed behind. They occupied, we took the surrender of the Germans on Corfu, because that was the only way they could get out, was through Sarandi. And 40 went over to Corfu and they garrisoned the island. We went back to Italy to recuperate, get new equipment, new battle dresses and everything like that. Then we went to Malfetta,
How did you feel after the Sarandi operation?
Gutted. Absolutely. Drained. How the hell I got through it, I don't know.
Because of the exertion of it.
You know, it's the adrenaline is pumping so much. You know, when it's all over, you're drained of everything. Then we went up to Ravenna, in northern Italy. And that was the operation of Lake Camaccio.
Were you in that?
No, lucky enough. I'll tell you a story. I missed that one as well. And thank God I did. We were in the first time we were ever in what we would call the line. That was dug in slit trenches. And it was very flat north of Ravenna. We were dug in the side of these dikes. There used to be a road running, something like Holland in a way. Very marshy. And we were dug in these slit trenches. And we're dozing off, having a little bit of a kip. I mean, there was really nothing much happening, We were firing off a Major Macmillan. He's another, well, we had some damn good officers, you know. I mean, they looked after their men very well, and we respected them for it as well. Anyway, he was in charge of the heavy weapons, and I suppose everything was quiet before we got there, and he started up a hornet's nest, firing off his 3-inch mortars. Anyway, they sent something over. I mean, there was nothing much. Anyway, in this slit trench, and we were with the, I think we were by the side of the 10th Indian Div. And in the night, you know, it was getting cold in the night. We were huddled up in these slit trenches. You heard a rustle, and then you felt something going down there like that, on your boots. And they were feeling for your bootlaces, you see. We always do our bootlaces like in the army, you do your bootlaces up like that, you see.
Who was feeling for your bootlaces?
Gurkhas. They're feeling your bootlaces, you know, of course you're about to jump, you know, grab your gun or whatever it was, you see. And all you hear them say, "All right, Johnny," and off they go. that was really, you know, the old hair on the back of your neck would certainly stiffen up. Anyway,
what was the idea of that?
Well, they were on patrol, you see, and of course, if they felt you happened to have your foot in a jackboot, I mean, that was it. It was up with the old cookery, and that was the most amusing part about it. And then I had terrible stomach ache. I was really doubled up with it. So I stuck it for about, maybe something, you know, something or other. I might have had something in my old rations that had upset me. Anyway, it was on for about 2 days. So I reported sick. Went to the sergeant and said, "Look," I said, "if anything's going to happen," I said, "I'm not going to be any use to anybody." I said, "I got this terrible stomachache." So he said, "Well, better report sick." He said, "There's a advanced first aid station," he said, "quarter of a mile back." He said, "Make your way there," he said, "and report sick." So anyway, reported. Got to this farmhouse. Saw these stretchers outside. And I said, "John boy, there's no way you're going to go in there and say you got stomachache." Because it was all wounded outside, you know, on stretchers, you know. Lightly wounded, you know. Now, I don't think it was anything serious, you know. Something in the leg, or, you know, they had arms in a sling, or their head in bandages. And as I said, no way was I going in there and say I got a stomachache. So I went back, and the sergeant said, "What did the doc say?" I said, I told him the story. And he said, "Well," he said, "oh, don't blame me." He said, "Anyway," he said, "we're going back to Ravenna tomorrow." He said, "You report sick then." So we went back to Ravenna and reported sick. We used to call our medical officer, we used to call him Doc, you see, Captain McWilliams. He said, "Ah, what can I do for you, Morris?" I said, "I got this stomachache." He said, "Yeah," he said, "I can see," he said, "by the look on your face," he said, "it really hurting?" I said, "Yeah." So anyway, put his hand on my stomach, and of course I went like this, and he said, "How long have you had this?" I said, "Oh, 3 days." He said, "You know, Morris," he said, "you're a bloody idiot." I said, "Why is that, sir?" He said, "The way you're looking," he said, "the way you're holding yourself," he said, "I would say you've got an appendicitis." So anyway, they whipped me down to Rimini. I was in the hospital there. Of course, they examined me, and of course, what it wasn't an appendicitis. It was the worst kind of dysentery that you can get. It was a anemic dysentery. Of course, while I was in there, the Operation Camacho with being on. So anyway, when I was walking around after being pumped with liquid and having to get rid of it, we were going round the wards then, you know, looking for, you know, casualties from the from number two, or any commando. It was number nine, 440 and 43 commando. The whole commando brigade were on the combative operation, which was to try and get round the back of the Germans before they went out, you know, north, through northern Italy. And they say that that was some operation. They were in these boats with outboard motors, because the Germans had bombed the dikes, and the water level had gone down. And it was, as they said, they had to carry the boats more miles than they did, riding them, because the outboard motor couldn't work. He said they were up to their necks, practically including this mud. And they had to, after all that, they had to, you know, fight a battle. Anyway, they succeeded, and I got back. And of course, when I got back, the Germans had just surrendered. You know, the war was over, as far as we were concerned. Then I met up with a chap, Dick Whittingham. You know, we were really great friends. It was only after the war that we were really great friends. And he was wounded at Camacho, and he lost an eye. He blown up on a jeep, crossing this, trying to getting across this bridge. He was blown up by a landmine. And I was saying to him after the wars, I said that was hard lines. I said getting out. I said a week before the war ended. And he said, oh well. He said I was lucky, John. I said, how the hell can you say you were lucky? He said, well, he said, I don't know, I lost my eye. He said, but a piece of shrapnel, he said, went in just above my belt buckle. And he said, on either side of that, he said, I had a phosphorus grenade. So I said, well, you were damn lucky, weren't you? Oh, and after that, when the war was over, within a week, we came home, sailed from Naples, went down to Naples, got on the troop ship, the Carnarvon Castle. We landed in Southampton. We went to a transit camp just outside Goodwood Racecourse. We went on leave. Then went back to our units, and then they disbanded number two then. And then I was transferred to number four. And they were in Recklinghausen in Germany. That was in the Ruhr, near Dortmund and Essen, all around that area. And we were guarding Waffen-SS prisoners, and they were being screened for war crimes. But the most pitiful sight I've ever seen in my life is when the displaced persons, people, were let out of the camps, and they were Russian, Poles, every nationality you can think of. And of course, they were going around looting the farmhouses, and we had orders then to guard these farmhouses and to shoot any looters, because, I mean, the farms were the only means the Germans are feeding themselves at that time. We were feeding them, you know, I mean, the Americans and us. We were feeding them. And we wanted to try and get, you know, the Germans to get back on their feet, you know, as far as feeding, you know, the farms, you know, producing vegetables, you know, which was vital for their nutrition and everything like that.
Did you have to shoot any?
No, we didn't. We used to fire over their heads, you know. I mean, you know, to frighten them off. And but it was really pitiful. You know, I mean, to think about those poor, you know, poor people that, you know, gone through. You know, I mean, there's. But and then from then we were they disbanded number four. I went back to the signals just outside of Hamburg. An officer said to me, he said, Morris, he said, I see you, he said, you've got a wonderful war record. I said, thank you, sir. He said, are you thinking of signing on? I said, excuse me, sir, I said, I'm not going to even join two pieces of string together. And that was, and then I discharged out of the army. Yeah.
So how do you feel now about having served with the commandos during
I think it's the most wonderful thing I've ever done in my life. They're the best, you know. You can't describe, you know, that, you know, those bunch of chaps. From all walks of life, from the officers down, they were really wonderful. And even now, you know, we go up, we meet together. I mean, the London branch, I mean, they got 60 to 70 members nearly every month. And that's going some for, mind that, the home counties. It used to be the London branch, but now they call it the London and Home Counties branch. There's a chap from East Preston, Charlie Major. He's on the General Committee's number three commando representative. We both go up every month, you know, from here. Used to be three of us. There was Ozzy, a chap by the name of Osborne. Now, if you want to know a story about him, you speak to... he's called Vincent Osborne, MM. And he's got a story to tell you. He's in Chelsea Hospital. He's a Chelsea pensioner.
Which was the worst operation you were in?
Salandi. Definitely.
Why was that?
For losing people that you knew. Being killed by the side of you, for the weather, everything was, you know, thrown at you. It was mine anyway. I think it was mine. I mean, the raids on the islands. I, looking back, I see they're taking that in my stride. But I suppose. Thinking back now, I suppose although you didn't know it, perhaps in the back of your mind, you knew the war was ending, you know, coming to an end. And I suppose you were thinking, you know, oh no, not me. Please God, you know, sort of thing. I suppose, looking back now, I suppose that could have been it. And, you know, seeing the horrors of war, you know, I mean, before... I couldn't have cared less, you know. I mean, seeing a dead body, you know, they said, oh, don't you have counselling or anything like that? We didn't have counselling. I know it took me 2 years to settle down into civilian life. I mean,
why was that?
I don't know. I suppose, like being dull, I suppose, in a way. You weren't with your mates, you know, having a good time and bad times and. I just don't know. It's just, I mean, I used to argue. I mean, I never argued. I never used to argue with my parents, but after the war, I used to, you know, argue with my parents. I never did before that.
Did the war leave any other lasting effects with you?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't.